Hello, everyone, and welcome to Friends of the Force, a Star Wars podcast. I'm your host, Brad.
And I'm your host, Sarah.
And on today's episode, we are talking about Star Wars The Bad Batch episode number 10, titled Common Ground. It's directed by Saul Ruiz and written by Gersimran Sandu. We are in the second half of this series. We are going to be talking full spoilers for the latest episode of The Bad Batch, and we are so excited because Sarah, I know you were a huge fan of this episode. You've been waiting for
it. Did somebody say politics?
The politique of Star Wars.
Did somebody say interesting locations?
Did somebody say oppressive empire?
I mean, we're not wanting an oppressive empire, so like, just don't. I don't want people to think that I'm like pro oppressive empire, because I'm certainly not.
But the dynamics. Okay, let's rephrase that.
Yeah. The dynamics of an oppressive empire are interesting in the Star Wars.
Impressive empires are bad. For new listeners, they're like, "Wow, I'm not listening to these clowns now. Look at them.
They believe in the empire." I really don't.
We really don't.
I just bought a Rebel backpack, guys. I'm not a fake fan, I promise.
I promise I'm a Rebel.
But yeah, no, this episode, you texted me this morning and were like, I love this episode, exclamation point, politics, exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. And I was like, oh, okay. So I watched it and politics, yes. And we were talking a couple episodes ago, I don't know if it was last episode or the one before, about the mid-season trailer, and a couple of the clips we got from that ended up being this episode. Mm-hmm. And it was really exciting to see it all play out and see what this world was and how it was kind of changing under the Empire. And it presented some very interesting thoughts that I can't wait to talk about. And this episode had a really solid B plot. I have to say, I thought this one was really quite balanced between, I think, both the A plot and the B plot. And I would love to know if you agree or disagree, or and what your overall thoughts on this one were.
Yeah, I think it was really, really great all around. I think some of the transitions between the A and B plot weren't the best, but like overall, the plots themselves were great. Like the pacing of it all and where it all culminates towards. And I can already see some people online saying like, oh, what was with that episode today? And like, listen, I hear the filler episode talk happening again. Here we go again. People.
This isn't a filler episode.
Episodes that build out our characters and make them learn something is never filler, ever. There's no such thing as a filler episode. Even Dave Filoni believes that. This episode is important. It is very important. Because we see our heroes very, very hesitant to help any of the separatists at all. They're like, we're going to go rescue a separatist senator. No, thank you. I would rather get eaten by a bantha. Although I don't think banthas are carnivorous. Probably the rancor, Moochie would eat them first.
Yeah.
More of a carnivorous being. Although Moochie
would be
never
right
done.
Because justice for Moochie. She's never done anything wrong.
Yeah. She can eat whoever she wants. But
yeah.
To take those characters, and then by the end of it, you have Echo like putting his hand on the senator's shoulder and being like, you know, live to fight another day, and like comfort him. And we've already talked about how Echo is kind of the level-headed one of the group who has mm-hmm. that moral compass that always points north, points the right way. And even Jennifer Corbett mentioned that in the interviews we talked about with her last week or the week before. And so to have that growth of these characters to say, hey, we have a common ground. That's why the episode's called Common Ground. You needed to establish the fact that the enemies that you had before are no longer your enemies. The enemies of my enemy are my friends is kind of the point of this episode, to show like, hey, now we're all in the same boat here. Like, it doesn't matter who you were before the war. What matters is who you choose to be after the war and the Empire started. Right?
Yeah. It's kind of like a High School Musical, we're all in this together kind of moment where they have to rally together and come past their differences to realize that there's a larger force at play that is there to hurt all of them. They all need to work together in order to come to a sort of conclusion that aids everybody, right?
Thank you for using a reference that we both get, by the way. High School Musical.
Are you joking about that, or are you being serious about that?
No, I'm being serious, because usually I'm the one referencing things. You're like, I haven't seen that, and I'm just like, ah, I'm in the old age home.
Oh yeah.
So I just want to say I appreciate you using something that we can both relate to, and makes me feel like I'm youthful.
Yeah, High School Musical is pretty much my entire life, so I am happy to talk about High School Musical at any turn, any junction. I've thrown parties that are based around High School Musical as a child. Like, we decorated my house. It was incredible.
We should do a podcast series, a spinoff podcast series. Instead of like High School Musical, the musical, the series, it could be like Friends of the Forts, the podcast, the series, the podcasts about the series.
I think that's a really great idea. Let's pocket it. We can talk about it after we record.
Okay, cool.
But coming back to the Star Wars and Moochie eating anybody she wants without any remorse, I think that this episode gave us so much about characters and just allowed us to see them. And I really appreciated that. And it also gave us more about the world at large, the galaxy at large, which is something that I have been wanting more of in this series. So we really got it here. And I found it super, super interesting that this world that they go to, Raxus, in the city Raxalon, is essentially where the Separatist Senate met. So that building they were all meeting outside of was the Separatist like Senate building. And I think that is very interesting, because as someone who hasn't watched a lot of the Clone Wars, I think there's more of that going on in the Clone Wars than just in the prequel films. There's a really interesting sort of landscape to that space, and questions about how the Separatist senators, how their governments are functioning under this new empire, because ultimately they're a part of it too. You remember back to Revenge of the Sith, and everybody's cheering and everybody's clapping about the Galactic Empire, but Senator Avi Singh is going, oh, but wait, he's having a conflict of conscience here, and mm-hmm. and in this time is supposed to publicly support the Empire, and instead of saying that he doesn't support them. And so it's just really interesting to kind of watch the space where these ideological gray areas are kind of playing out now that mm-hmm. the Empire has taken power. These lines that were once so black and white between the Separatists and the Republic, and between good and bad, right, are really challenged here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm happy that we see now from a purely political perspective, right? Because mm-hmm. we've talked a lot about the socio-political aspects of the Empire's rule and what that's looked like, but to actually see, like you're saying, these systems that were once the opposing force against the Republic are now being forced to either join or perish. And I thought it was very interesting how the episode opened, not with the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
I think it's the first episode this season that hasn't actually opened with our cast of characters. It almost felt Doctor Who in a way. You know, I kind of got that vibe of just Doctor Who always starts a lot of episodes with a crisis and shows us the crisis or the issue. And then it goes into the intro of the show, and then it cuts back to the Doctor. And like the Doctor getting the call to help that eventually brings him back to the first crisis that we saw when we opened the episode.
Sure.
I liked how the director and the writing team of this episode kind of approached it in that way, to really set the landscape and make that the focal point for the episode, to say, this is what matters. Like, this moment here, it's the moment where it zooms in on Senator Avi Singh's hands, and you can see him kind of like rubbing his hands together, and he's very nervous, and he's not really sure if this is what he wants to do. And the close-ups of him and GS-8, who is played by Cyan Clifford, who, if you know her, she is the sister on Fleabag of Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who plays L3 in Solo. So now you have those two Fleabag sisters playing droids in the Star Wars universe. You love to see it.
Yeah.
Everybody go watch Fleabag. It's an amazing show. You can find it on Amazon. But it's those small moments of building up to the point where he is a rebellious person and goes against what they want him to do. And he pays the price for it, but he sticks up for what he believes in. And also just to see all of those citizens too, you know, follow his lead, because they seem so angry when the Empire is speaking, and as soon as he comes up, they're clapping, they're happy, they're joyous. And mm-hmm. then when he kind of takes that first step against them, everybody else starts revolting until they send the walkers in. And getting them out of the way through basically crowd control. So yeah. It's a very intensive sequence for sure. So you can feel it building up until the point of like the droid issuing out the call for help. And you're just like, oh, who's going to answer? You know, so I just love that aspect of it, of like, oh, who's going to pick up that call? And you know, it's the Bad Batch, but it's still fun mm-hmm. to approach this episode in that way. What did you think of starting with that versus with like the Bad Batch?
I really liked it. And I think that the way you've just framed it is great because it gives us the bigger picture before we kind of dive into the specific story that we're following for the episode. I want to highlight the opening quote. Her name is Bragg, B-R-A-G-G, the commander or the Imperial. And she says, "The Empire is not your enemy. We promise to treat all planets within the Confederacy of Independent Systems fairly. All we asked in exchange was for your loyalty, yet that has not been forthcoming." So it's very interesting in this opening line, like the, hey, we are your friends, but we made a promise with you and you're not keeping your side of the promise. But part of that is, you know, like, how can they make this promise when they don't even know, you know, what it looks like? Or they make this promise and realize they still got a raw end of the deal. And you're just like, well, look what you've done. Great job. Like, you've really just put yourself in a worse position. And it's interesting that Senator Singh is having this conflict and does it so publicly. And you think, I agree with you in saying that it's really interesting that, you know, it's the citizens who are really hesitant to the Empire and not necessarily Senator Singh right in the beginning, because when he comes out, they're starting to cheer for him. So they still have respect for him once he kind of joins on their side. And I just think that there's this line when the Empire kind of starts to press into them a little bit where it says, we have every right to be here. You're the ones trespassing.
Yeah.
And that was probably the line that hit the hardest in this episode, at least for me, because that just links back to so much of last year. A lot of protests are peaceful until the police show up.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who are pushing people around, you know, physically and just like into space, into specific spaces, or saying they can't be places. And
right. Or just start firing tear gas just randomly, yeah, and, right? and doing those sorts of things. Just so, when things are peaceful, and then they turn it chaotic, and then they fit that narrative to, oh, it was a violent protest.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. And what we see here is an incredibly peaceful situation. They're mm-hmm. cheering, they're booing, but everybody's just kind of standing around and watching, you know? So and this citizen is right. The Empire is the one who are trespassing on their world, in their land, you know, in their cities. And I just thought it was a really great parallel to our present day and understanding the dynamic between the Empire and the worlds that they're oppressing in this situation. I think a line like that really can hit very close to home for people who have witnessed or been a part of the social movement for the Black Lives Matter and that sort of different social movements that have gone on in the past year.
Yeah. Yeah, and even the Empire says, we're putting in curfews, it's for your own protection.
Yeah.
It's not for their protection, it's so they can arrest anybody who's passed their curfew. And we've seen that yep. in our own world. It's a way to restrict people's the right to peacefully assemble. So you really do see that oppressiveness of the Empire on full display. And even Singh says that. He's like, you guys are an oppressor. Yeah. I will not stand for it. You know, and he gets mm-hmm. whisked away to God knows where, you know, GSA can only imagine, but she understands the consequences, and luckily she gets out of Dodge and calls in Sid, who gives this mission to the Bad Batch, and lo and behold, the Bad Batch make their way to Raxus, and they didn't think they would make it there, but they hoped to, but not in these circumstances, not expectedly. So
there's something for me that really sticks out in this, is that, you know, we know that Sid was an ally to the Jedi during the Clone Wars, yet also here is taking up the mission of a separatist senator, which I think just adds like a single layer to who she is and what she does and maybe what she's in it for. So that's just like a little thing. Did you have any thoughts about that, or did you find that notable at all? If not, that's totally fine too.
I found it to mean that she's very connected still. I mean, she knows the Hutts. She knew Bib Fortuna enough to do a job for him. She knows a separatist leader at the heart of the separatist territory, and she worked with the Jedi. So yeah, I just think it goes to show that she was really playing all sides, but just to her own benefit. It's not that she had loyalty to any one faction. It was just like, I'm going to do what makes me money. And if also watching Omega while you guys go on this mission makes me more money, I'm going to do that too. So that's what I'm driven by. But even during the subplot, when she says a few things to Omega, and even the patrons in the bar are just like, what are you doing?
Sid? Yes, you know, I love our returning bar patrons.
Yeah, this feels very resistance-like to me, honestly. Yes. You know, all the patrons hanging out in Aunt Z's bar. I love there's like a moment where she says something to Omega, or before she says it to Omega, and you kind of see the expression on Sid's face of like, oh God, what am I going to say next to not upset this kid? And the fact that you can catch that glimpse of her thinking that or feeling that way goes to show that she does have somewhat of a heart still, even though she is purely driven by money and contracts.
Yeah.
She still does want to do the right thing. And I thought that was great with the whole B plot of her nurturing Omega and like making use of her and, you know, winning the Jarek games together. I love how Omega, I know we're kind of onto Omega now from the politics here, but I just love how she barters for 60% of the earnings versus 30. You know, just like, she's learned a thing or two from the Bad Batch.
Yeah, we can kind of jump around here. I don't think we're in any strict order here. But I want to highlight, since while we're talking about Sid and Omega, I want to highlight some of the best Sid lines in this episode, of which nearly everyone she says is really good, including more of her nicknames for the Bad Batch. Yeah. So we have, I'm not interested in a history lesson, goggles. It's like the second time she said that, because, you know, Tech likes to talk. And then to Omega, she says, hey, Tiny, I've got a mission for you. And then she says, now get scrubbing. And then at the end of the episode, she says, ease up, Bandana.
Oh, Bandana is such a great name for Hunter.
It's so good. We have Dark and Broody and Bandana, and like, I love them both equally.
Yeah, we should start calling them by their Sid nicknames exclusively.
So anyway, Goggles, my favorite character. I just love her energy in this episode, and how Omega, how they're kind of using each other for mutual benefit. And I appreciate that. And also when Omega's like, sorry, I kind of just like pouts about it. Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
When are we getting our Omega's Gambit spinoff series?
I saw that meme and I had a blast with it, because I just watched Queen's Gambit recently and I was like, I get this reference. And I loved Queen's Gambit. I cried. It was so good.
So good. Anya Taylor-Joy, get her in Star Wars. Just saying. High Republic movie. Let's do it. Put her in the Acolyte. I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there.
Wait a second, though. Like, I can imagine her as like a really interesting, like very close to the vest politician, or like, ooh, like a really sneaky bounty hunter or informant. Oh,
I would
type of
let
character.
Her hunt me for sure.
Oh. Boo.
For sure. Take me dead or alive. I don't care.
But like, because she has it in her eyes, right? Like, it's,
yeah.
Anyway, this is not an Anya Taylor-Joy podcast. It could be. Get her in Star Wars.
Make the rules around here and none of the points matter. So,
yeah. Yeah. We are Whose Line Is Anyway. Anyway, I guess while we're on the Sid conversation, let's talk about this B plot and how Omega is secretly a Dodoric queen. And she says, it's a strategy game. I'm good at strategy. And she is so good at strategy. What, is there anything she's bad at, Brad?
No. She's bad at not being bad.
Yeah. She just continues to give us all the different facets of herself. And I really do love that we're getting all of this in this episode, because she knows instinctively that that move for Sid is not the right one. Mm-hmm. She's like, instinctively, shouldn't have done that. I said, you shouldn't have done that. And then she's beating everybody in the bar and everybody knows about it. And I love it because she really is asserting her own dignity and also her own autonomy. And I think that's really valuable because in the past couple of episodes, well, I mean, she showed a lot of agency in the episode with Cad Bane, right? At the same time, she was also a pawn between, you know, Lama Su, Nala Se, and the bounty hunters who are trying to capture her or not right. capture her, right? Like she is a character as much as a plot point at sometimes. And I really appreciate when we get to know her better as a character, like we did in this episode, and getting to learn a different side of her really explicitly. Even though I guess it makes sense that we got that side of her as well with Toto. Like she strategized that's what she needed to do in order to get out of Cad Bane's clutches.
Mm-hmm.
So I find her delightful. I find her delightful. And she says, you know, I wanted to be useful even if I didn't go on the mission, because she cleared off their debt.
Yeah. She's very resourceful.
Everybody kind of underestimated her.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're not going to. And so what did you think about the conclusion of between Omega and Hunter here?
Well, I got to shout out Kaz's curse from Star Wars Resistance, even though it's not really similar to this. But I think of Kaz when he's getting really lucky at that table on the Colossus and he's just winning all of the games. And Nico's like, wow, Kaz, you are really great. And here I just kind of felt the same thing with Omega, you know, just being this Dajaric prodigy.
Yeah.
Just being so good at this game and mm-hmm. so strategic. And we keep wondering like what her thing is, you know, and mm-hmm. I think it's a culmination of a bunch of things. It's, you know, it's the empath in her. It's the strategic nature of her. It's the ability to get out of any situation. And we've seen that with the third episode Replacements, where she hunts the electric dragon thing and gets their power cell back. Mm. So you really see her putting all the different components of the Bad Batch together to form her own personality. I mean, we're seeing her basically be tech in this episode, almost like a very strategic, big brain.
Be tech and Hunter.
Yeah. Yeah. So she puts all of it together.
Yeah. Anyway, she's the best of them. She's just the best. That's why everybody wants her, because she's the best.
Yeah. So I thought it was a really great B plot for what was a very stacked episode on the A plot in the action and in the stakes and also time. There wasn't a lot of time that Omega was on screen in this episode, but they made every second count to make that B plot so powerful. So,
yeah, it felt really meaningful. And I really loved the end between Hunter and Omega. I felt like that was a really nice end to that episode. But to tie kind of the A plot and the B plot together, there's this moment when Hunter is with Echo and GS8, the droid. And Hunter says, you and Omega loop around.
Mm.
And Echo says, well, that would be impossible as Omega is not on this mission.
He's such a smartass.
And he's kind of like, oh, you're right. And then kind of fixes himself. And it's very interesting for Hunter to instinctively feel that Omega is part of the batch. Like he has these conflicting feelings about Omega's role, clearly, right? Like we need to keep Omega safe for her own safety or for her own sake, but also for the sake of the galaxy. You know, we have a responsibility to keep her well and alive and happy. But he also kind of has to do a little bit of work in realizing, and that's what we kind of see him do at the end, that she is her own person and she has the ability to help them and make her own choices and stand on her own at times too. Mm-hmm. So I think as a parent, he's really working to find that balance of like, okay, my kid is growing up and I have to give them, they still live in my house. It's still my rules, but I have to give them a little bit more space. I have to change their curfew from 10 to 11. I have to let them go to their friend's house. You know what I'm saying? So like, I feel like he's trying to figure out where the line is in order to be the best and most responsible parent figure that he can be. And I felt that moment was a little bittersweet in him realizing that.
Yeah, and he's been teetering back and forth with that balance all season. We even saw that when she gets kidnapped by Fennec. And then in the next episode, he's like, no, you're staying on the ship. And then she ends up saving them from the Zygerians. And he's like, okay, now you're coming with us. But then she gets kidnapped by Cad Bane. And he's like, okay, now you're... So, you know, he keeps kind of going back and forth. And he's really emotionally driven in that way. I think sometimes he thinks more with his heart than with his brain. And realizing that, yes, like she does have a lot to add to the group. But I also understand he's very overbearingly protective of her. Because once she's gone, she's gone. And he made a promise to her that nothing like what she saw on the Bora Vio cloning facility, which is what we found out it was called through the Star Wars episode guide, the Kamino place.
Yeah.
Nothing like that's ever going to happen to her. So I can understand where he's coming from, but I think it's kind of just going to be an ever changing balance with him. It's really just going to depend on the moment for Hunter.
I fully agree. And I think that he's never going to be fully satisfied with himself and the choice that he's made, whether, you know, good or bad. Like, there's no winning. he's like parenting a teen, you know, you're like, oh, the teen is still going to make mistakes, even though I'm like, I'm giving them this little edge. And then, you know, oh, I gave them too much. But you're like, I'm trusting them. And I know they're going to break my trust anyway.
Parenting is hard. It sucks. Yeah. I'm not ready to be a parent.
But we both have been teens, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally just, you just like have to keep pushing them, nudging them in the right directions until they, you know, become a good, genuine, caring person that contributes positivity and thoughtfulness into the world. And also is important, you know, so it's not easy. It's definitely not easy.
It's like Omega has all those qualities, you know, positivity, thoughtfulness, like, you know, good energy into the world. But Hunter just has no idea how to be like, am I doing it right? Like he has no idea how to feel satisfied in his with his team and with his found family there.
You know, him saying, hey, let's play one more game. If you win, you get to come on the next journey with us. He knows he's gonna lose. He's just just wants 100%. To give her the satisfaction, which I love.
I think
that
he wants to see just how skilled she is in a game with him.
Show me what you got, kid.
Yeah, and I think that's really valuable for him to like have a full understanding of what she's capable of, because she can be an asset and an ally to them on their missions, as much as, you know, even though she's young. And so I think that's great, recognizing her full potential. Do you have anything more to say about like the B plot and Hunter and Omega as a person? Because if not, I'd love to hop back into Raxus.
Yeah, I think we should talk about the battle sequences and that those different set pieces and all the choreography, because it was really well executed. That whole sequence, like the walk between the walkers and the different grenades they're throwing around, and the fact that they're only stunning all of the stormtrooper, I guess we can call them stormtroopers now, or clone troopers.
Yeah.
The clone troopers, the fact that they're not killing anybody, you know, they still have a heart for their brothers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on in this episode.
Yeah. I would love to start kind of right at the beginning. We've already kind of highlighted it, but I just want to start with the crowd on Raxus. This is a separatist world. We might think of them as, you know, the separatists, we think of them as the, you know, the Trade Federation and the people that we see in the prequels. But there's so much more to that. And we see here the people who live on the separatist homeworld, the separatist planet, are very diverse in species and appearance and come from, it seems like, all walks of life in this city. And so, you know, we kind of get that, like, I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old moment from Cassian in Rogue One. But we don't get a ton of, you know, I'm lying a little bit because I know there's stuff in the Clone Wars, but again, I haven't seen the Clone Wars. But like, we don't get a ton of like separatist individuals that we like get to know. And so I thought it was awesome to see this large group of people together. But kind of moving on from that, I would love to talk about using GS-8 as a decoy within the palace or the residence or whatever we want to call it, this government building. She's like, they're like, who are you? And she's like, this is my master's residence. I am supposed to be here, you know? And they're they kind of fall for it every time. She does a great job being a decoy. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think it was so funny when she got pushed out of the bush and they're like, hey, get out of here. And then they just beat him up, which is just so classic Star Wars to lure unsuspecting troopers into an area and then just beat the shit out of them. You know, like, so classic.
So Star Wars. So great.
Star Wars. But yeah, I thought that was great. I just love the sneaking around, and the music too was really, really, really good this episode. It just really stuck out to me. And the cameras, by the way, kind of looked like BD-1's head, just a little bit more elongated.
Oh my gosh. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. I thought the cameras were used like really well, and it didn't actually take me out. Now that I'm talking about it individually, I think it could have had the power to take a person out of the story. For me, it didn't. It totally worked. Because we know that the Empire is surveilling everybody essentially all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. But I also love when GS-8 sees the vase break, and then she like runs to clutch this other one that she knows is toppling over, and she's like, this is, you know, a most prized vase from my master. It was given to him after years of service.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's holding it, and she's bringing it around, and then it's ultimately used by Senator Singh to crush over the head of a stormtrooper. And he goes, I didn't care for it much anyway. I just have to laugh because that's such a small, like, little thing, but it works so well within the context of this episode.
Yeah. I will say, too, one note on Raxus, not the first place that we've seen it in the Bad Batch. It has appeared in Star Wars, The Clone Wars before.
Oh, okay. That was actually the
first on-screen appearance. Heroes on Both Sides, because Raxus is the home to Lux Bon Tarry, who kind of has a little bit of a fling with Ahsoka Tano. But also, Sarah, I just found out too, it is mentioned in Leia, Princess of Alderaan, in Tarkin, and in Catalyst.
Oh as well. My goodness! I was like, I recognize this name, but why?
Yeah, I think it's also in Dark Disciple as well. I'm just reading this off Wikipedia. I don't remember these things because my brain has a lot of things in there already. I can't fit more. So, you know, that's cool. I think it's kind of cool to maybe go back and revisit that one Clone Wars episode featuring Ahsoka and Lux, and to see what Raxus looks like before the Empire and after and compare the two.
I have to say, let's talk about the landscape, like, of the place just a little
beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Like, oh my gosh.
The red leaves. Like,
I'm so obsessed. Like the statues city. In front of the Senate. I loved it. And it reminded me of Vardos just a little bit, but more beautiful. Mm. Like the kind of concrete structures, very cityscape, kind of reminded me of like the first couple of missions in Battlefront 2 and of Vardos, which is Iden Versio's home planet. Because there's a red thing going on there, isn't there too?
Yeah. Maybe? Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not going crazy.
I love fall too. So that's my favorite season. So when you show me like fall colors on a planet, I'm just like it's my home place.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I feel like Raxalong would be a very interesting city to visit with, between its center for government and these beautiful nature elements and just the architecture. I don't know. I'm fascinated. I thought it was beautiful. And like overall, the setting plus the content of the episode reminded me. And the klaxons, like so many klaxons in this episode, it reminded me of Rogue One, Battlefront 2, the prequels, all kind of wrapped into one little package. And it felt just so very Star Wars in a very quintessential way. And I really appreciated that. Like the whole episode, the settings felt familiar and really felt comfortable for me as a Star Wars fan, a fan of the prequels and the politics and the games and that sort of stuff. And I don't know. I found it to be extra lovely.
Yeah. I do want to mention that Senator Avi Singh, he's played by Alexander Siddig, who you might remember from Game of Thrones. For any Game of Thrones fans out there, he played Doran Martell, who is related to Oberon Martell, who is played by Pedro Pascal. So a little bit of more crossover there for Game of Thrones and Star Wars. But I think he was great. I actually thought at first it was Ben Whishaw, who is the voice of Paddington So I thought Paddington was in this episode, and I was going to freak out that, oh my God, we finally got Ben Whishaw in a Star War. And I was a little sad, but also Alexander Siddig is also great. So I'm happy for that. But I was oh man, is it going to be, am I going to be able to post about this? I'm so excited.
One day this will be an Anya Taylor-Joy and Ben Whishaw podcast, and it'll be lovely. But in the meantime, we get to enjoy so many other talents that it's great too. Like, there's no losing here.
Yeah, yeah. Avi Singh, though, he did have like the red hat. I was like, oh my God, like it's Ben Whishaw. They got the red hat on Avi Singh. I was like, it's all connected. I was like the Always Sunny meme again. I'm just like, it's all connected.
Yeah. But
I thought the ending of the episode was fantastic. I mean, just again, mm-hmm. all the different set pieces, the different sequences of them blowing the hole in the wall and then blowing the wall behind them, and like the how strategic the whole thing was, and Tech using these walkers himself was just so wholesome in a way.
If you don't mind, please blast a hole right here.
And Wrecker's like, yes, please, let's do it. I love blasting things.
I love it how he's just like, I know exactly where this like way to get into the tunnel is. It's just gonna be, we're gonna just right here.
Not his first time, probably. You know,
yeah, like blasting a hole in the wall of the city wall. That was really great. But we're going past that moment to the end of the episode when they're about to leave Raxus. And the senator is like, what am I doing? I cannot abandon my people. I must help them. And GS8 says, you will, Senator, but not while in Imperial custody.
Mm-hmm.
And is it Echo who says, she's right, Senator, live to fight another day?
Yeah.
I think that moment is also really powerful because it shows the tough position that everyone is in here. In order to live to fight another day, in order to be of help, he must currently abandon his people on the ground.
Right.
Which is not what he wants to do. He cares about his people. He's a dedicated senator, clearly. But he has to take another path in order to help them. And that's a really tough calculation to make. The self-preservation of it all, but also like the good for the people. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was really interesting. And I felt like it maybe has nudged the Bad Batch towards maybe a more altruistic sort of lifestyle rather than just doing jobs for Sid.
Yeah, absolutely. Because in the beginning of the episode, the droid's like giving them all the details and they're just like, we don't care. Show us where he is. You know?
Yeah. Yes. Then it's Echo who says that. I think.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it
care.
Is actually. Just, yeah. So yeah. To them, have him have that growth here and to say like, okay, these people have hearts too. Doesn't matter that they're separatists. We're fighting the same enemy at this point. So again, the enemy and my enemy is my friend. So we are now friends. We are on common grounds because we are all fighting this force that cannot be stopped unless we all band together. Because if we're all divided, it's never going to be beaten. It's never going to be defeated. This evil will persist forever. And yeah, it is a bit tragic that he has to leave. And I think of Leia in The Last Jedi when Poe's like, you know, there were heroes on that mission. And she goes, dead heroes. You know, like, there's no good in being a dead hero. There's no good in trying to save your people here. And you're just executed by that torture droid, which, by the way, shout out to more torture droids in Star Wars. I love the classic meow, meow, meow sound. It's so good. It's so good.
Can we highlight that this was all happening in some sort of wine cellar as well?
Yeah, Avi Singh is like styling.
Like there were all sorts of assortments of wines. There were purple wines, blue wines.
He's got good taste.
Yeah, he's got everything there, which I thought was such a
on Raxus got to be bumping.
Do you want
to
go?
The vineyards. Yeah, let's go to the vineyards on Raxus for our next Friends of the Force episode.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
I agree.
It's not like the Imperial occupation will dent our plans at all.
I
just feel like that moment with Singh really kind of brings up the choices that the senators make. Having just read Revenge of the Sith and, you know, kind of getting Bail explicitly being told, like, you have to go along with it. you were not on the petition of 2000, the delegation of 2000. Therefore, you are not on Palpatine's radar, which means in order to help your people, you need to continue.
Yeah.
Being a pawn in the Empire's game for this time until you can move.
That is a great point. And even Mothma does that a little bit. And, yes, and Leia does that in Rebels too.
Yes. And could Sing have done that part if he hadn't spoken up? And the answer is like, probably yeah. But now that he has spoken up and he's on their radar, he has to use different tactics. So there's a lot of calculations that like a politician in this setting has to make in order to help feel like they're best helping their people. And it's really interesting to put Senator Sing and Senator Bail Organa next to each other in that and see how they chose a different path that led to a different outcome. And I hope that we'll get Sing again, and maybe we'll get him in relation to Rex or Trace and Rafa or somebody else. And I hope that we see the Bad Batch kind of going on that path as well.
Mm-hmm. It's got to end up somewhere with them being as part of the rebellion. I feel like that becomes a natural path, although maybe I'm wrong and maybe I don't know these characters well enough. Maybe I'm just speaking nonsense, but part of me feels like, again, they've been driven by the wrong things and the wrong attitudes, and finding that common ground is like that learning lesson of like, this episode's not filler. This episode might be the catalyst for them to want to join up with Rex again, to realize there is more to war and fighting than just simply being a soldier. It's about simply doing the right thing. It's about helping people. That's why Trace and Rafa help Ahsoka. Because, you know, when somebody's in need, as Ahsoka told them, you help them.
Yeah.
It's why they help the Bad Batch. So it's all connected. It's like Star Wars is about selflessness and helping people when they're in need. It's really that simple. It's really that simple. It's why rebellions happen, you know, just helping everyday people and bringing them on board. It's why the rebels could just bring on anybody, regardless of their past. And that's what made it work, because people wanted to choose the right path. And hey, come on in. We need the help. So I'm hoping that's where the Bad Batch end up, because that would be poetically beautiful.
I would love that. All right. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about this episode? I feel like we've kind of chatted about most of the major beats. Any funny moments that we missed or anything that we didn't get to?
I think we covered about all of it. I just love that we got to sort of the bigger imperial picture of the galaxy and what's happening and how it's affecting what was once the opposing force within the galaxy during the Clone Wars. And to see how they had a fallout from all of this is interesting. So I like that we're getting it in piecemeal. I'm glad that you finally got it for yourself as well, because you've wanted that for so long.
And more. Yeah. I'm just greedy. Give me more now.
but I like when we're not inundated with it too, because it makes these episodes feel even more special and just stand out more. Because if you get this week after week, it becomes repetitive. So to have this after all the Cad Bane nonsense, and I say nonsense as in like great, awesome nonsense, just it was a lot.
We really enjoyed those.
It was very stressful, right? So to get this is kind of almost like a slowdown for the episode before we, I imagine, ramp up into the final five episodes of the series or the season.
16?
Yeah.
Six episodes?
Six episodes. Yeah.
Wow. That's weird to think about.
Woo, sheesh.
Oh no. And again, I'll just say we don't really know where we're going once again, which is an exciting position to be in. Like, I don't even know if I can speculate. I just don't know.
Yeah, now we've seen everything from the mid-season trailer.
So yeah, now we're in the dark again. Yeah.
You know, so there we go.
Who knows? Here we go. So many choices.
Well, I think that about wraps it up for this episode of Friends of the Force. If you enjoyed this episode, you should definitely check out our older Bad Batch recaps. And for the next six episodes, you can tune in here for all the good spoiler talk. So, Sarah, where can our listeners find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at Sarah's Puzzled Pages and Twitter, Letterboxd, and Goodreads at SCH221.
And you can find me on Twitter as always. And as for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Make sure wherever you're listening to follow the podcast, so all of our latest episodes drop right into your feed, including our Bad Batch coverage, all of our High Republic episodes that are coming out in the next few weeks here, And if you'd be so kind, please leave us a review so other people find the podcast and join the Star Wars discussion. So it just takes a couple extra seconds. Just scroll down and give us the old rating and write a little blurb about what you like about the podcast. It helps us out.
We also have a Patreon where tiers start at just $1 a month. And we are so, so grateful to all of our patrons: Adam, Amy, Anna, Brian, Cheryl, Deborah, Donnie, Elegy, Jesse, Knights of Ren, Huang, Levi, Lindsay, Lucy, Marie Claire, Neil, Rachel, Sarah, Saber Bouquet, Sky Talkers, T, and Travis. Thank you so much.
Yes, and thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Friends of the Force. And until next time, may the Force be with you always.
Bye.